It's Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
The conversations that we have in break. Some good ones. Wish we could air them. Just talk about meth heads and the things that meth heads do. Stoke, what was the Broncos' riskiest move this offseason? This is Mike Evans' take on it.
What do you think?
The riskiest offseason move was what they chose to do at quarterback. I mean, it's the biggest risk because what they've done is they've taken a gamble on Case Keenum that last year was not an aberration. They've left themselves incredibly thin behind him.
Right.
And for a franchise that both you and I agreed upon leading up to the draft needs to be in the business of drafting and developing quarterbacks every single year, chose not to.
Yeah.
So their strategy when it comes to the quarterback position was clearly their riskiest offseason move, not releasing C.J. Anderson.
Strong stuff there from Mike Evans that the riskiest move for the Denver Broncos this offseason was bringing Case Keenum here. Thoughts?
Well, look, it's the most important position. And so it pains me, but I have to agree with Mike Evans because you didn't address it in the draft. You had the number 5 overall pick. So you had a premium pick to be able to take one of these top 5 quarterbacks. You overlooked, 3 of them? And you're putting all your eggs in Case Keenum's basket? He's played one really good year of football? So that is risky. Yeah. And I think he was referring to the ESPN article when he said it's not C.J. Anderson because they voted C.J. Anderson as the riskiest move, and I agree with him. That's not risky at all. Okay, let me tell you. That is low risk.
Low risk.
I told you a year ago they were releasing him. Okay, I told you that a year ago. Okay, because of his contract. He wasn't going to be able to justify that type of money. And you look at what's behind him, look, not risky at all to release C.J. Anderson. Low risk. The riskiest is the quarterback. And I can name a lot of other positions that are more riskier than C.J. Anderson being released.
Like?
Right tackle. Jared Valdir, trading for him. His cap number. And you think you're going to fix it with Jared Valdir. He's hurt. He didn't even practice this offseason. That's pretty risky. You're putting everything on this guy's plate, and we haven't even seen him practice. And you're paying him a lot of money. Aqib Talib, trading him. Getting rid of him. You know, I mean, he did have his issues, but man, he was a really good football player, made a lot of plays for you. So that is riskier than C.J. Anderson being released.
Let me say this.
Drafting Bradley Chubb at number 5.
That's risky.
Could be. When you have Shane Ray, when you got Shaq Barrett, and you're drafting another outside linebacker at 5, and you're passing up on your guy. I've said his name 1,000 times, and now I can't even remember it. Not Zach Martin. The guard from Notre Dame.
Quentin Nelson.
Passing up on Quentin Nelson, a guard that, you know, could be a Hall of Fame guard.
Yeah. He's already got 1 foot in, Canton.
Already. About to just jump in after the first game, he's in. Put him in.
Those
in front of C.J. Anderson for
okay,
me.
Okay, so
C.J. Anderson is in the back of the bus. I mean, that thing is way down the line of risky moves.
So let me just divide the conversation here in two because I don't think it's a this or that combo. I agree with you that moving on from CJ is not an incredibly risky move. I don't believe that. I could argue that CJ Anderson would be more of a sure thing than anyone else in the room. You could argue that, but in terms of risk, unless C.J. Anderson goes out there and runs for 1,500 yards this year and everyone here falls flat in their face, we can retroactively maybe assign it, but I'm with you. But here's where I disagree with both you and Mike Evans on the highest level, is that you guys saying that Case Keenum was a risky pick. I think it is so much more incredibly risky to spend the 5th overall pick on a quarterback rather than give Case Keenum a 2-year contract front-loaded with guaranteed money, there's really not a whole hell of a lot of risk for me in terms of Case Keenum, because if he doesn't work out, you take a couple bucks on the chin and you move on from him.
But what's your backup plan? That's the problem. That's why it's really risky, because they put everything in Case Keenum's basket. They're all in on Case Keenum, and that's why they didn't draft a quarterback this year.
But what if they had drafted Josh Allen, right? He's staring at you at number 5. To me, drafting Josh Allen and putting your eggs in a young franchise quarterback again, would be far riskier because of the lasting effects of it if it doesn't work out.
It's all risky. It's all risky at number 5. If you draft a quarterback in the first round, that's risky.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And if you're going all in on Case Keenum, that's really risky too, because he's only showed us that he played one good year of football.
But they haven't gone all in on Case Keenum.
They have, because they didn't draft a quarterback, so now they don't have a backup plan. So that you got to put that in that category with Case Keenum, because they signed Case Keenum to this contract, and because they believe in him a lot, they didn't even draft a quarterback, so we have no backup plan.
If you had drafted, let's say, Josh Allen number 5, what would be the backup plan then?
Let's see how it plays out. I mean, you would have to start Case Keenum.
All I'm saying, if you didn't go the Case Keenum route and you went and drafted Josh Allen 5th overall.
What would be the plan?
Yeah. Oh, what would be the backup plan?
This guy better work out. Right. There is no backup plan.
Which is why I think it's more risky if you went down that route.
I think they're all risky. When you're dealing with a quarterback, unless you can get Peyton Manning, and even that was risky because his neck. He had like 12
true.
Neck surgeries.
That's true, right? He did have 12 or 13.
Yeah, somewhere around that. But so... If you can't get a proven commodity at the quarterback position, you got to commit to somebody. That's risky.
How would the Broncos look if John Elway drafted Josh Allen, or Josh Rosen for that matter, and you got 2 first round quarterbacks on your roster? If one of these guys
is gone, he would have been gone.
But I'm saying the optics of it. If like Josh Allen was if we're having the same conversations here in Denver that they're having in Buffalo, Josh Allen going into training camp as the 3rd string. What type of conversations would we be having? I mean, you talk about open season. You know, it just strikes me as...
Not really for me, because look, I'm giving a quarterback a pass that rookie year.
Okay.
A complete pass. It's going to be tough. I'm not expecting him to go out there and play really good football or play solid, consistent football at all. I'm looking at year 2. We're going to take our lumps year 1, and I don't expect to see much of anything being good. If it is, that's great. But year 2, I need to see something.
All right.
But I think they're all risky. When you look at the quarterback, I think, you know, that's why I agree with Mike. That's really risky. If you drafted 1 at 5, yes, that would have been risky too. But they far exceed C.J. Anderson.
I agree with you there. There would have to be a lot of things that happen for us to say, boy, oh boy, what a monumental mistake by the Broncos moving on from C.J. Anderson. I mean, we would have to get no production here, and he would have to just be a monster in Carolina.
Right.
And I just don't see both of those things happening at the same time. But you are right, Stoke. When you talk about the quarterback, it doesn't matter what organization you're with, what city your NFL team is. When you talk about the quarterback, each time you play with fire a little bit.
Yep. That's right.
We have breaking news in the NFL. And it got something to do with a little bit tie here in Denver. We'll get to it next. So we got breaking NFL news.
What? Just like you said last segment, it's just funny around here sometimes.
It's all right. The NFL has suspended the guy that me at one point was banging the table for. I think you were right there with me.
Yeah, I was.
Reuben Foster. 2 games for a gun and marijuana offense.
He's very fortunate.
You're not kidding.
He is very fortunate. I mean, a couple months ago, he was looking at never playing another down in the NFL. And now he gets only 2 games. Very, very fortunate. I sit here and... I'm not holding my breath that he has learned his lesson. I hope he has, and hopefully he takes his second chance and makes good out of it and does something good with it. But I'm not holding my breath with that guy. Red flags all over him when he got drafted, and that's why he fell so far. And now, after 1 year, you see all these incidents come up with him. And very, very fortunate that he has his second chance.
No doubt.
Because there were some serious, serious allegations there.
Yeah,
and he dodged them.
He did. And the one allegation was that he, you know, hit his girlfriend up the side of her head so hard that he ruptured her eardrum. That was one of the accusations. But that accuser testified under oath that she had lied, you know, and gave the whole.
We all understand.
I got it. Right. Yep.
Why she did that, which is a shame. But it is what it is. And he's getting the second chance. And I just hope you don't see any more Reuben Foster in the news for anything bad, because then we'll be sitting there saying, we should have known.
Yeah. He said, quote, "I accept the league's decision and am sorry that my mistakes have hurt my team. I have a responsibility to the 49ers, our fans, and our community, and I am committed to learning from this situation and making better choices in the future. The support I have received over the last 5 months has been humbling, and I do not take it for granted."
Well, hopefully that's the case, and, you know, he ends up being a model citizen and does something good with his second chance. But, you know, when he says, "I accept the league's decision," I mean, look, 2 games after everything that has happened, I mean, he's jumping for joy right now. Yeah. That's all he's got.
Right. He's got 14 games when he comes back.
Right. That thing could have been anywhere from the rest of his career to, you know, who knows what the NFL wants. 6 games, 10 games. I mean, they could have done a lot of different things here with the serious charges that they had against him. Because the NFL doesn't care about the justice system.
Yeah, oh, good.
They can
I'm glad
do
you
what
said
they
that.
Want to do.
Right. I'm glad you said
they
that.
They make their own rules and their own decisions when it comes to things like this. And there's really no rhyme or reason. You know, it's supposed to be a minimum of 6 games for domestic violence, and, you know, all of a sudden you see Jameis Winston get 3.
Right?
And then
right?
you see like, this situation, and, you know, so they could have done a magnitude of a lot of different things here with Reuben Foster. He's very fortunate that he gets to play in the NFL again in only 2 games. He's a very, very fortunate man, and I hope that he just does something good with it. We'll see, but I'm not holding my breath.
No, me neither. Me neither, because we already have – this is not the first red flag.
Right.
The 49ers said, quote, "Our organization – well, this is GM John Lynch. "Our organization understands and supports the league's decision. Although we are disappointed that Reuben will not be with our team for the first 2 games of the season, we will continue to work with him on making better decisions and eliminating unnecessary distractions. We are encouraged to see Reuben take responsibility for his mistakes and hopeful that he has learned from them as well." Hopefully that's the case.
Yeah, you hope that, you know, they've supported him, but they've also, I think they've drawn a line in the sand with him.
The Niners.
Yes, and he understands where he's at, and we'll see how it plays out.
Another bizarre news story that has come across our desk here just in the last, you know, hour or so. The United States Customs and Border Protection agents in Philadelphia came across 108 Super Bowl rings being shipped into the country from Hong Kong last month.
Wow.
And I didn't realize that this was a thing, that the Eagles actually make replica Super Bowl rings and sell them to Eagles fans. And I didn't realize that you could buy a Super Bowl ring. The Eagles made a bunch of them, authorized replica rings, and they were available for $11,000.
Wow.
Those rings have been sold out.
Ah, so that's why you see
the demand.
The counterfeit.
Yep. Right. There's a demand for them. They're going for $11,000.
Wow.
Had the rings been real, the total value of the shipment would have topped $1 million. So someone from Hong Kong trying to make a quick buck, but busted by the Customs and Border Protection, they had said, quote, "Customs and Border Protection officers are like offensive linemen in that both are on the front line and work hard to protect something important."
I like it. Good job. That's good job. That's quite a seizure there.
You're not kidding.
Got a over $1 million worth of rings, but I was kind of curious of why they were faking these rings. But obviously, the Eagles are able to sell their own replica rings, and there's a pretty penny there.
You are not kidding. I remember actually now that I'm seeing this story, I'm remembering it and sharing this out loud. The Cubs did the same thing 2 years ago when they won the World Series. I remember the organization making authorized replica rings that you could buy for like $10,000, and they went with the quickness. So this is probably something that you'll continue to see. If teams can make a buck on it, sell the Super Bowl ring.
Yep, absolutely. I know that some teams would give rings away to different people or different fans and do things like that. I didn't realize that they sold them, that they actually were selling these rings. And I don't know the difference between these replica rings and the real rings, but there you go.
Yeah. And then another cool, this has made me think of a story that I saw last week, that there was an assistant, an executive assistant. Well, she was a former secretary for the Philadelphia Eagles forever. She was like around, her name is Carol Cullen, and she was around since 1985 in the Eagles organization. She was a secretary. She was a do-all, a type of worker. She just handled so many things in that organization, and it didn't matter which coach came through. She was their secretary, and everyone loved her until Chip Kelly was hired, and Chip Kelly fired her.
Wow.
A couple of years ago. She said that she was, she said, quote, "Chip just said my job was no longer needed. It was very difficult. I had no idea it was coming. So it was very emotional for me. And it took me a while to get over it and get used to another life, really. Because when you work in football like that, it's not 9 to 5. It's 7 days a week. And I loved every minute of it." And Chip came and fired her.
Unbelievable.
So last week, an email from the Eagles came through. About this story broke last week, but about a month and a half ago while she was at work, notifying her that she had received a Super Bowl ring. And she said, I thought this was an error. And she called and said, "I'm no longer with the team. There's been an error." And they said, "No, there's not an error. This ring's for you."
Wow.
And it's making my hair stand up right now even saying that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Good for the Eagles. Classy organization doing the right thing. We got a RamosLaw.com text here talking about $11,000, question mark. Wow, Zach, suddenly your wrestling belt doesn't seem so bad of a purchase there. That's from Joe. Good one, Joe.
I like that, Joe.
That
I like
$300 that you dropped on the belt. Look, wow, that's nothing compared to $11,000 for these rings. You got a steal, buddy.
It was $350. Stoke is Jake Butt the rookie Bronco under the most pressure? I want to take a dive into that when we come back. Isn't this 4th of July music?
I was driving.
No?
Yeah, sure. I'd prefer a little Zac Brown Band, but, you know, hey.
Did you, you miss Kenny Chesney this past weekend?
I did. I missed Kenny.
Were you a little sour? Would you have been there?
I went in 2012 when he was at Mile High.
Good time?
Oh, yeah. We had a great time. I mean, it was hot. We had a great time. I probably would have gone, but I'm hitting up my guy Luke Bryan here in the next month or so.
Is he coming to Red Rocks or Mile High?
Mile High.
Okay.
Doing it big.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm hitting that.
You're going to drive all the way downtown?
I know. I think so. Like, just for special occasions.
Whoa.
Might have to get a driver for this one.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'll be there for Luke Bryan.
I was listening to Schlereth and Evans. They were talking about, you know,
would you like Luke Bryan?
Rookie.
Do you even know who that is?
I do.
Okay.
I do. Hey, look, I don't. I try to keep myself out of like boxes of like I listen to this or I listen to that. If it sounds great, I want to listen.
I'm with you. I'm the same way. You know, there's no box for me.
Right.
I'm all
Luke
over the
Bryant,
place.
Luke Bryant, Zac Brown Band, listen to Rolling Stones and Migos and Drake. You know, I like if it sounds good. And I've always been of the belief that if it's not time sensitive. Like I feel like if Tom Petty, for example, released Damn the Torpedoes album, which was released in like 77. If he released it today, I still think it's a smash hit.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not one of these guys who's, oh, that's older. This is new. No. Good music, good movies, good movies. Just art in general, I guess. Walk it like I talk. Walking like a target. okay. Listening to Slyerthan Evans about who's under the most pressure, which rookie. And this is what Stink had to say about Jake Butt.
I don't think you look at Bradley Chubb and go, boy, he's going to have to get us 9.5 to 10 sacks. And you know, I just don't look at it that way. I think that he'll be a productive player. I think he'll be put in pass rush situations. I think he'll be able to create enough pressure to help take pressure off of Von Miller. But I don't look at, like, I think that Jake Butt would be, I think a tight end that dominates the middle of the field is far more important than the sack totals. I'll trade 45 catches and 6 touchdowns for, you know, 10 sacks from Bradley Chubb.
Which one is under more pressure?
And for rights and purposes, we'll just keep Jake Butt in the rookie caliber.
NBA rookie. I think it's Bradley Chubb's under more pressure. Number 5 overall pick. You better come in and perform. And oh, by the way, Shane Ray is nicked up. Who knows what his availability is going to be early in the season. You're going to be starting, Bradley Chubb. You need to make an impact right away. The pressure's on you. Jake Butt, 5th-round pick? Yeah, I know we got a hole there and a void there, but just because of that doesn't mean that he has a lot of pressure on him. He didn't even practice last year. He wasn't a 1st-round pick that didn't perform. He was a 5th-round pick.
But what about the pressure to produce at that position? That falls on his shoulders.
No.
I think.
No. Why? He's not even starting right now. Why does that all of a sudden just go to Jake Butt because the Broncos have done a lousy job of addressing the tight end position? Why am I going to put that on Jake Butt? He wasn't a 1st-round pick. He's not supposed to, you know, save the tight end position. I know a lot of people are holding out hope because of where his projections were. And then after he got hurt, you know, he was a, you know, top 5 talent that we got in the 5th round because of the ACL injury, which is not the case. But just because the Broncos have been lousy with addressing the tight end spot and finding a tight end, now all of a sudden all of that's on Jake Butt's shoulder, a 5th-round pick that's coming off of an ACL injury that didn't practice last year? I'm not putting that on him.
But because that's the Broncos' plan.
Did they tell you that? They're telling me Jeff Heuerman's their plan.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, haven't you read some of the articles out there by Broncos guys? Jeff Heuerman is their plan, or at least that's what they're putting out there. Who's starting?
Jake Butt.
Who has been starting?
Jeff Heuerman.
Yes. You think Jake Butt's starting game one?
Yep.
Could be. That could be the case, and I think
that's their plan.
Well, I think that would be best case scenario for the Denver Broncos. I think Jeff Heuerman has kind of reached his ceiling. And I think if Jake Butt shows enough early on and they make him the starter, then he's doing something really, really good. But I'm not putting a lot of pressure on Jake Butt. No, if he doesn't perform well, you know, that's on the Denver Broncos.
So for the tight end group, is there any pressure? Is there not pressure?
I think more pressure is on Jeff Heuerman because he's fighting for his job. He's fighting to show the world that, you know what, I can play football. I can produce in the NFL. But Jake Butt, I mean, he's considered a... So are we're looking at rookies here?
Yeah. I think that was the origination of the conversation of, you know, what rookie was going to be under the most pressure.
Okay.
And go...
But I still say Bradley Chubb.
You're
going to put Jake Butt in the NBA rookie category, which is fine because... You know what, he didn't play last year, didn't practice last year, so if he was in the NBA, he would be a rookie. But I still think Bradley Chubb is under more pressure to go out there and perform. When you're a number 5 overall pick, we don't have 2 years for you to, you know, figure it out. We don't have a year to just give you to figure things out. Shane Ray's not available early in the season probably. You got to produce right away. We need to get some pressure off of Von Miller. Jake Butt, he's a 5th-round pick. Do the Broncos need production from the tight ends? Yes. But all of that, is that on Jake Butt's shoulders?
I just don't know if you can say there's legitimate NFL pressure on a guy's shoulders who has 18 career receptions, you know, in Jeff Heuerman. Pressure, I think, is derived from expectation.
Well, like, but he was a 3rd-round pick?
He was.
And so, I mean, there's pressure on him because if he doesn't perform, he's out of the league.
Okay.
So there's immense pressure on Jeff Heimann to go out there and perform and to show that he can be a starter, because this might, like Paxton Lynch last year, this might be his last opportunity to compete for a starting job and to be in this position going into camp as a number one guy. This is probably it for him if he doesn't go out there and perform. So you want to talk about pressure on a guy? That's Jeff Heimann. He's got a lot of pressure going into training camp to live up to expectations, to show that he can be a productive tight end, to show that he can be a starter.
What about the scenario that Mark actually gave specifics for? He said, I would rather have 45 catches and 6 touchdowns from Jake Butt than I'd rather have Bradley Chubb get 10 sacks. In that scenario, where would you lean that he gave specifics on?
Yeah, give me that production from the tight end also. Because we have other good pass rushers. So if Bradley Chubb doesn't perform, you know, hopefully I'm holding out hope that Shaq Barrett, Shane Ray, and Von Miller pick up that slack.
They can keep it afloat.
Right. I mean, who do we have at tight end? I don't have a lot of hope there. There's not a lot of guys that I can say, well, this guy can pick up the slack if we don't get a lot of production from a Jake Butt. But if you give me those numbers, give me the tight end.
Mm. Me too. Me too. It is such a need. It's not a want. You know, my mom used to always say, there's a difference between a want and a need.
Yeah.
This is a need. This is a need, period. And the fact that it is, there's like ambiguity at the position. I don't know who's starting week one. I mean, in the literal sense, we don't know who's starting week one. We don't know if Troy Fumagalli is going to be ready to go.
Oh, he's practicing day one.
No, we'll see.
Lunch, baby.
We'll see. You may.
But we're not holding out. I mean, we're not holding out hope that he's going to be the starter or get us 50 catches this year. I mean, hopefully that's the case. But I think it's all on Jake Butt and Jeff Heimann. More so, if you're telling me who has the most pressure in the tight end group, it's Jeff Heimann because he's fighting for his job.
I like a guy with his back against the wall.
Yeah, he has looked better to me. In the mini camps and OTAs, Jeff Heimann has looked better to me, and hopefully he continues that. Hopefully he can stay healthy, and then, you know, we might have something.
And a lot has to do with who's throwing him the football.
Yep,
Know, he's been targeted 35 times in his career, only 18 receptions. That's almost 50%. You're looking for something better than that, marginally better than that.
Yeah.
But a lot of that might have to do with just who's throwing the ball. All right, Stoke. Did Nolan Arenado spark the Rockies' fire with not his words, not his play at third, but with his words? One of our hosts thinks so. We'll get into it next. All right, Stoke. Did Nolan Arenado's words spark the Colorado Rockies? And, of course, we're referring to Arenado's comments to The Athletic, Nick Groke of The Athletic, this past week. You were getting inducted into Louisiana State Hall of Fame, so I didn't get to bounce this off of you. But just to summarize these quotes to The Athletic this past week from Arenado, quote, I just get pissed because I don't want to lose anymore. I've been in the playoffs once, and it was only one game, and I really want more than that. I'm tired of coming to the ballpark and losing. We work too hard as a group to experience that. I'm not saying I go home questioning, like, I don't like this place. I love it here. But, yeah, I want to win. And the more we lose, the more if you lose all the time, no one wants to be here.
Okay.
Pretty stern comments.
Yeah. That's kind of what I would expect to hear from him. Just being honest.
He went on to say, quote, we can talk about it all we want. We've been talking about this since April. How are we going to turn it around? Blah, blah, blah. We haven't seen it yet.
Okay, that was a little bit more direct at what's going on right now this year.
He also went on to talk about the front office leading up to the trade deadline. Quote, they're in an awkward position. They're probably wondering. They probably don't know how to approach it right now. Only we know how to approach it, and that's winning ball games. Hopefully, we can put the pressure on them to go get guys. The more we win, the more they're going to have to make a move.
Yep.
He's talking about sense of urgency.
Because if you lose, they're not bringing anybody in.
Right.
You got to show that you're capable of taking this thing to the next level. So, absolutely. And that's on the players. It's not on Bud Black. It's not on the GM.
Right.
It's not on their owner. You know, Breidich, Bud Black. No, these players have got to get it done. Go ahead.
He went on to say about the sense of urgency. There's urgency. There has to be. I know we're only at the halfway point, but we're not trying to lose ground. These other teams, they're going to pick up guys. The Diamondbacks, the Dodgers, the Giants. They're going to make moves if they're close. We have to stay close because we want to be able to compete with those teams. But the more ground we lose, we're going to be in trouble. They're going to be better, and we have to trust who we have in here because that's how the front office usually approaches it. So there's a lot there, okay? A lot of, frustration, obviously. But it was very direct, and it was kind of ominous. You know, we came in here on, I think it was Friday after we saw this, and we're like, man, it sounds like that he's kind of mentally already reaching a boiling point and possibly be, I don't want to say it the way I want to say it, but I've asked, out loud into this mic if he's already checked out.
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I think he's just frustrated. You know, your high expectations this year, you haven't been producing. And look, who wants to be a great player and I don't know how long he's played for and only
make
the playoffs one time, one game.
He's played in over 750 games in a Rockies uniform. Right. He's played one playoff game.
I'm not taking any of those words saying he's checked out at all and that he's looking to move on. I think that he just wants to win. He wants to go to the ballpark and be a part of a winning baseball team. And I don't think that tells me anything about his plans for the future. Because I think they're building something the right way here. And this team has a chance if these young pitchers continue to improve and some other pieces fall in place to be a consistent team that has a chance year in and year out to be in the playoffs.
It sounds to me a little bit like an ultimatum. That, look, if we're not a winning team by the time I'm up, I can't stay. I need to play for a winner.
That could be how he was trying to get his point across also to the front office.
Well, since then, these comments came out, I believe it was Friday morning after Thursday night's 9-8 win when they salvaged that last game against the Giants. Since then, they won that game 9-8, and they just won the series against the Dodgers. And they get started off on the right foot, thanks for a couple different factors last night against the Giants. The Rockies have now won four out of their last five games.
Yep.
They have two games left with San Francisco. If you can win one of these next two, you ensure another series win. It would be back-to-back series win in division.
Let's go ahead and get a sweep. We won the first one. We got two more. I'm tired of these series wins. Let's get a sweep.
Okay.
Let's get a sweep. That needs to be our mindset.
I like it. Senzatella's on the mound tonight. The game is here home. I'll be down hanging out at Blake Street Tavern leading up to the game.
Nice.
Come say hello if you're around. There's still time, Stoke. There's still time. I believe there's 11 games left until the All-Star break, and we're already past the halfway point. But we got two games left against the Giants, and then it's three at Seattle. Three here against the Diamondbacks, and then another three here against those same Mariners, who are just a great baseball team this year.
Make or break. This stretch of 18 games that we talked about last week is make or break. But I look at his words and what he said, and, did that fire up the Rockies? Did that get them on this winning streak that they're on, four out of the last five? And I say no. Now, maybe it made the front office open their eyes and say, okay, we need to think about this a little bit more on how we want to approach. Wow, Columbia just tied it up. Unbelievable. Sorry, World Cup's on. Not a huge soccer fan, but the World Cup, I mean, they tied it up with in extra time. But they opened up the front office eyes and how we want to approach the trade deadline if we're close at all. You see them ship John Gray down to AAA. Like, hey, we can't just stand pat with what's been going on here. We got to make some moves, and we got to shake this thing up. Tapia's back in the lineup. So it might have done that. But as far as getting this team to play better, the guys on the team.
You don't see that as realistic?
No. I mean, you think.
Like, that didn't spark all right, Nolan's pissed. I don't know.
I'm going to play better now because Nolan's pissed. No, I mean, Kyle Freeland last night was thinking about what Nolan Arenado said the week before.
Right.
And that's why he threw such a good game.
It was terrific again.
Yeah, that was awesome. But no, you know, it's like when a pregame speech from a coach, okay, did that help you win that game?
Don't those alter the course?
Did that help you win that? Is that what you're thinking about in the fourth quarter when you're taking that three, Zach? Is that what I'm thinking about, in, you know, with a minute left to go in the game and we need to get in field goal range to win it or a touchdown to win it? Am I thinking about what coach said last night? No, I'm not. So words are words. I mean, you got to just go out there and perform. I mean, what does it do for the players? I think nothing. But the front office now, yeah, that could open their eyes and how they need to approach the trade deadline and the moves that they might need to continue to be made. Maybe they were going to be sellers, and now they might be buyers. So we'll see how it plays out. But I don't think it has affected their on-field performance from the players. I don't think it's woken up any players to all of a sudden they're like, wow,
yeah,
Nolan's mad. Let's go ahead and win some games now. Let's play better.
Right.
Let's not make errors. Let's do the little things. But that was a big win last night.
Man,
big
it's
win.
Huge. It's huge.
With Bumgarner on the mound. Whew.
And Freeland, I mean, was it the first pitch or just the first batter? But he gives
first
up that
batter,
home run to Gorky Hernandez.
I think it was the first pitch.
I think it was, too. And I'm just like, you're kidding. Like, you're kidding. But, man, he settled in. He went seven strong. Kyle Freeland, man, he is. And I'm going to have a chance to actually interview him next week, I believe, for the better part of an hour. We'll give you details on that as it comes. But huge fan of Kyle Freeland. I think this is now three starts in a row where he's just been terrific.
Bullpen was spot on. You know, eighth, ninth inning, nothing there. Got a little hairy there in the eighth for me, but with the walk. And they got out of it right. No, they gave up a base hit, but they got out of it right away with a nice double play and good job by the bullpen holding the lead.
Yep,
that's a big win against Madison Bumgarner. You needed to win it at home, first game of the series. Continue this thing going because it doesn't get any easier before the All-Star break. Seattle, Arizona, Seattle. So let's go ahead and take care of business here. And this soccer game is awesome. And I bash soccer a lot, but I've enjoyed when I've gotten a chance to watch some of the World Cup, especially when they get down to the round of 16. That, to me, is exciting. And we were in Louisiana the other day, and Russia was playing, forgot who they were playing, and they went to Spain, and they went to penalty kicks to decide who's moving forward and who's going to win. And it was awesome. I love when it finishes with penalty kicks, like the women's hockey in the Olympics when it
Canada.
Went to shootout.
Yeah.
I mean, that was awesome.
Remember it forever.
And so I love how it finishes. I hate regular soccer whenever all of us – it's just a tie. You know, it's just like, wait, what?
Yeah, draw.
No, somebody's got to be a winner. Somebody's got to be a loser here. And Colombia with a great effort there at the end of the game to tie it up.
So will now you start to pay attention now that it gets down and down, or are you just kind of like, hey, whenever I'm in front of a TV, if it happens to be on, I'll watch it? Or are you making a point to watch it?
I'm not making a point. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
So
I'm
right.
not making a point to watch it, but when it's on, you know, if I got nothing to do and I'm sitting around the house, I'll try to find a game.
Does it bother you? I heard the fellas in the afternoon having this conversation. D-Mac said he couldn't get into it because he doesn't know who anyone is.
Well, I know some of the guys. I mean, they're not around. You know, you got Messi or Ronaldo.
Out.
I know they're
Ronaldo's out.
I know they're out. No, it doesn't bother me. I'm watching this game right now, England and Colombia. I know not one player. Doesn't bother me at all. I just want to see a good game, and it was a good game down to the end and extra time. You know, it's going back and forth.
And that's what Alfred was saying. I just want to see great competition.
Yeah, exactly. I don't care if there's any stars in it or not.
Let me ask you a question. Would the same logic apply to the NFL? If you didn't know who the players were, and obviously the popularity wouldn't be the same, but just a hypothetical. If you didn't know who any of the players were, and it was still great competition like you're watching with the World Cup, would you be watching?
Yes. Yep. Even if I know who the players are, if it's not a good game and it's not, you know, good competition and it's not, I won't watch it.
You're out.
I'm out.
Stoke.
I had a few of those with the Broncos last year.
Right. The garage has never been cleaner. ESPN, Stoke.
Tip-top shape.
Ranked the number one wide receiver.
Not for a spot on the floor.
All 32 teams. Who was selected for Denver's number one and for how much longer? We'll get into that, but first, what's up with that Denver snapshot?